supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we have a jam-packed show for you today, cats and kittens. Later in the show, we'll be talking with researchers from Rutgers University about a great new, better-tasting strawberry they have developed that home gardeners are already growing. You may want to get in on this strawberry action. We're also going to talk about how to rescue trees that were improperly planted with all their wrappings still intact. So to keep our wrappings still intact, we're going to jump right to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Reed, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Reed. How are you, sir?
I'm doing excellent.
And where is Reed excellent?
Right now I'm in Santa Fe, but my call is regarding to about 40 minutes north of St. Paul.
So you're in Santa Fe now, but you garden in Minnesota.
Yeah, we're just on vacation down here.
Okay, good.
And my question, we just bought a house, and we move in the end of July, and it has a fabulous yard for garden and some fruit trees, and I'm wondering what I can do towards the end of July to get ready to plant in September, October, and just maybe a pear tree, apple tree, something like that.
Okay, so congratulations on your new house. Really, the preparation you'll be doing in July is you'll be doing research. You want to make sure that you find good trees for your environment. Obviously, we can't overestimate how cold it gets and how much snow you can get over the winter time. So, I mean, you're going to meet your chilling requirement for these fruits. That's not an issue. But you want to make sure you get super cold hardy varieties. This will be a good reason to become friends with a good local nursery or two, and they'll have varieties that are really bred for the area. So you want to research, and what you want, number one, you want plants that are incredibly cold hardy. Number two, you want plants that are disease resistant as much as possible. And number three, I'm presuming you also need plants that are going to stay a manageable size, right?
Correct. We have about 0.6 acres. Half is open sun, half is a pine forest.
Right. It's not so much the number of acres you have, but it gets very difficult to control the growth of a, quote, standard fruit tree. They get 30 feet tall, and you start not to be able to get to the top and get to the fruits. No matter how many acres you have, it makes more sense to be growing dwarf or what are called semi-dwarf trees so that you can keep them a manageable size. One of the most important things about apple trees especially is you want to always be able to reach the top. You want to be constantly pruning off any branches that shoot up straight at the top and keeping the growth as lateral as possible. You don't want them to look like a traditional tree. You want them to look like a pair of hands stretched out sideways where you can get to all the fruits, where you can thin them, and where there's a lot of airflow between the branches. And obviously, the easiest and safest way to do that work is to keep them close to the ground. So you'll find your trees, and then you want to make sure, of course, that you can get these trees in August, and that is the preferred planting time. If you're told that they have them now, but they're not going to hold them for you or something like that, don't be afraid to bring them home in their containers and just keep them in dappled shade over the summertime and then be ready to plant them. I would plant them in August, and the planting instructions for fruit trees are really simple. If they come bald and burlapped, you want to remove every part of the wrapping and spread out the roots. If they're in a container, you want to knock some of that soil off and spread out the roots as much as possible. You want to dig wide holes that are not deep. You'll be able on all your fruit trees to see what's called the root flare, where the trunk of the tree meets the top of the root system. And you always want that to be above ground, even in your cold climate. The trees are not going to benefit from being buried deeply. If you bury the bark of the tree, it'll rot away and die. And then when you're done planting, you want to mulch the surface of the soil with 2 inches of the highest quality compost you can find. Typically in St. Paul, moisture is not a problem, but if it doesn't rain in the days after you plant the tree, you want to let a hose drip at the base of each one for like 24 hours per tree until you get rain or, you know, God forbid, man, I hate to say it, but in September you could get snow. And then I want you also to go to our website. Go to youbetyourgarden.org and click on the link that says Garden Answers A to Z and go to F for fruit trees. There's just two articles, really. There's the fruit tree basics and fruit tree pruning. And it's very important for apples. And the more apple trees you plant, the better the fruits of each tree will be, because you're not just thinking of putting one tree in the ground, right?
Right.
Three or four trees, yep. Ideally different varieties even, and then you'll find out which one. And what was the other tree?
Pear tree.
Pear trees are very easy. They're not going to be nearly as much work. You don't have to do the pruning and fruit thinning that you do with the apple trees. But with the apple trees, be prepared that they're going to take up quite a bit of your time in the spring. But, you know, the rewards can be great.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, Reed?
All right, thank you. Nice to talk to you again.
All right, take care, man.
Yep, bye.
1-888-346-9499. Pat, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Yes.
It's a pleasure to talk to you.
It's a pleasure to talk to you, Pat. Where are you?
Dayton, South Brunswick.
Oh, South Brunswick.
Around the Princeton area.
Okay, Princeton. We have a lot of friends in the Princeton-Lawrenceville area.
My question is, I am not getting proper answer. I have so many black ants in my garden, and I don't like to use, septicide.
And what makes you think that you need to use any insecticides?
There's too many.
Well,
Every time I pick up something, there is ants underneath.
But, Pat, they may think there's too many of us. You know, everything. We're always stepping on them. We never drop our ice cream cones frequently enough.
Every plant I got the hole.
No, that's not ants.
Oh, who is then?
Well, ants aerate the soil.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they keep termite colonies away from your house. But the ants don't eat little holes in plants. When ants do damage, in the rare instance that they do, and most garden variety ants do not cause any actual damage.
The little black one.
Yeah. They are not the ones eating holes in plants. If they are up to any mischief early in the season, if you direct seed things like lettuce and spinach, they can steal some of the seeds.
So may I ask you, what should I do? All my plants, including Brussels sprout, cabbage, cauliflower, my roses, all the plants have holes.
Okay. It's been a very wet season.
Uh-huh.
So my first thought is slugs.
Yeah, you recommended somebody put the beer at night and you get the slug.
And have you done that?
I did. I didn't see any.
So in the morning, there were no dead drunken slugs in the beer.
Oh, I wish, because I can kill them and that can be the protein for the plants.
Yeah. So then that leads me to believe that you have caterpillar pests, which are very common on cruciferous vegetables like your cabbage and your Brussels sprouts. There's two things I can suggest. One is none of the crops you're describing need pollination. So if this persists, you want to buy what's called a row cover. Well, you said you're in a garden club, so you know what row covers are.
Right,
you know the spun polyester blankets?
Yes.
And grow things like cabbage and Brussels sprouts under row covers. That way nothing can harm them, and they'll be absolutely perfect. But for now, I think you need to go out and get BT.
BT, where I can get the BT in a... granular or the powder?
Well, you would get some. Sometimes it would be a liquid that you would mix up and you would spray it on the plants that are affected. And then the next time a caterpillar took a bite out of that plant, the caterpillar would die.
Okay. When I can spray it, morning or evening?
A BT you can spray any time of day or night, and it'll persist on the plant for a good 10 days to 2 weeks. BT is a naturally occurring soil organism. It's been around in horticultural form for like 50 years under brand names like Dipel and Thuricide. And the nice thing about BT is it only harms caterpillars who are eating the sprayed plants. So you don't harm birds or toads or even butterflies.
Okay, I tried that, and I will write you.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you very much, and I will be in contact with you by email.
Yes, very good. Thank Let us know how everything works out.
Thank you, very good. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will appear at a farm-to-table event at the Spring City Library in Chester County, PA, on Friday evening, September 11th, and at the Horsham Township Library on Wednesday evening, September 16th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back to save your poorly planted trees, savor a sweet new strawberry, and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by Burpee, celebrating their 139th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, fruits of all kinds, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com. And the Espoma Company, makers of Biotone Starter Plus for new transplants, full of beneficial microbes and mycorrhiza for deeper roots and stronger plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, can you save a tree that was planted with its roots all inside the prison of burlap and wire caging? We will explore the possibilities. We'll also take more of your fabulous phone calls. But it is now time to welcome our special guests from Rutgers University, where a brand new strawberry has been developed and is being tested. And as part of our talk about how that all happened, we're going to make them tell you how to grow better strawberries in your own backyard. Peter Nietzsche is a New Jersey Extension County agent out of Rutgers. Bill Lubick is a professor and agricultural agent with Rutgers. Welcome to You Bet Your Garden, guys.
Thank you very much, Mike. Thanks, Mike.
One of the things that jumped out at me in the article about this strawberry, Rutgers Scarlet, was, Pete, one of your quotes at the end where you talk about what makes the flavor of a strawberry exceptional. And I was very surprised because you said it was not intense sweetness. It was a combination of sweetness and acidity. And that's the same line as the flavor of the perfect tomato. Are these two fruits more alike than we thought?
I think they are kind of alike in that way, that they both, you need both the sugar and acidity to get that little bit of bite, a little bit of complexity to the flavor. And then there's a lot not understood about all the volatile compounds that go with it that both hit your nose and your tongue at the same time and create that exciting flavor to you.
And you say that when a fruit is too sweet, it becomes bland.
Well, I don't know if it can be too sweet. If just the absence of any acidity, it becomes kind of bland. It's just all only, you know, kind of candy-like and not that complexity of flavor.
Now, Bill, you developed this variety specifically for growers of strawberries in New Jersey. But don't all of these varieties eventually make their way to the home market?
Absolutely, yeah. We're in the initial stages where farmers are working with us, testing these on farm fields. About 13 farmers right now we're working with in New Jersey. But the berry does well under both home gardening and commercial production conditions. And several of the lines that we're currently working with may even have, just by their nature and by the architecture of the plant, would be specifically adapted for home gardeners, more of an open architecture. And, you know, because of that, there's better air circulation. So you could potentially cut back on any pesticide use to control botrytis or gray mold on the fruit.
Yeah, we organic gardeners don't get those problems. Now, you used an interesting term there. Open architecture, which is a computer software term. But I presume you're talking about the layout of the plant, the size of the leaves, the space between the leaves. Is it a hybrid variety? I know it's been bred by you, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a hybrid. It could still be, you know, an open pollinated plant.
It's a hybrid plant. We do take we're actually specifically crossing two different lines. What we do is we actually, within the greenhouse, we control the pollination procedures very closely so that we can take and mix the two lines of genetics exactly the way we want those genetics to go. It takes many years to get the series of characteristics that we want in terms of flavor, plant vigor, texture of the plant, the post-harvest, you know, the ability of that particular strawberry to last. So there's a complexity of things that we look for in the field. And those would also be appropriate for any home gardener because they would want those same attributes in the home garden.
And we want to make very clear, because you use the word genetics, this is not genetic engineering. This is old school hybridization, which goes back professionally to what, guys, the 1600s, 1800s, and has been happening in nature since there were flowering plants.
Exactly. Yeah, there's modifications that constantly go on in nature and genetics. Basically, what we're doing is we're just steering that in the direction that we want it to go in so that we get the attributes on the fruit and plant qualities that we need to produce a more vigorous and better tasting strawberry.
When we go into the supermarket, or even when we choose varieties for our home gardens, there are different types of strawberries. And I think home gardeners tend to think of strawberries as one thing. But there are, and I guess this would be the standard for large-scale growing, the June-bearing strawberries. These are the big ones, right? The ones we see from California, a very large-sized strawberry that tends to only come have a very short season, at least in the natural world.
Correct. We're working with the June-bearing strawberries. And normally we see a harvest in our area of 3 to 4 weeks.
And the other type, which I personally prefer, are smaller. They come in all season long, or at least all summer long, and these are called the ever-bearing strawberries. I think you guys would probably agree, simply in terms of taste, and certainly in terms of longevity of harvest, these are excellent strawberries for a home gardener, the ever-bearing varieties.
Yeah, the ever-bearing, and now there's types, we call them day neutrals, are becoming more popular for the home garden. Some of them have better flavor than the Juneberries. Some of them might, depending on the variety, might not taste as good as some of the Juneberries. But the advantage to the gardeners, you can, you get a harvest most of the season long. Sometimes they shut down in the hot, dry conditions of the middle of the summer, but come back with some more fruit in the fall.
Again, so do tomatoes shut down when the temperature gets above, what, 92 or something like that?
Right. When you have high temperatures, sometimes you will see a certain loss in flavor in the plant. Well, physiologically, there'll be a certain amount of decrease in, in the production levels. And you get a better tasting strawberry when you can control the moisture and fertilization that's going to it.
Well, you get a better tasting anything when it's not all filled up with water for one reason or another, right?
When we do our taste test, if we get a lot of rain right before the taste test, then you'll see the, a decrease in the Brix or the sugar levels of that particular fruit because you have overcast days, you have less photosynthesis, less sugars forming, so the flavor tends to decrease as well. And also putting them on raised beds. It's always critical with growing anything that you have proper drainage. If you have good drainage, good organic matter, and the right fertility levels, you can produce an excellent quality strawberry.
Now you guys are talking. All right, we are speaking with Peter Nietzsche and Bill Lubick from Rutgers about the new strawberry named Scarlet that they have developed and are leaking out into the market. It's nice to hear that some home gardeners in New Jersey are getting to grow these fruits early. Do you guys find that people want, they have the eye for the California strawberry, the big June-bearing strawberry, and they're reluctant maybe to try the smaller berries of the day-neutral, ever-bearing varieties?
We get some reactions these days that consumers tell us that, strawberries don't taste like they used to, and I think a lot of that has to do with purchasing shipped-in berries from other states, other regions. And that's, great and necessary during the winter, but during our production season, there's nothing that tastes quite like locally grown, harvested, and eaten immediately strawberries.
If you live on the East Coast and you're buying California strawberries in June, there is something wrong with you.
I would have to agree. And that's where they're getting a bad impression on flavor. They shouldn't be doing that, and they shouldn't be doing that with any crop that's in season, really.
Now, you touched on something very important that I want our listeners to get the benefit of your knowledge about. You talked about how crucial it is to grow strawberries in raised beds, for the drainage. My thinking about strawberries is they are one of the most vulnerable crops. They're this big, super tasty, kind of fragile fruit that's laying there on the ground. And in a wet year, not only is that encouraging all kind of disease, no matter what kind of garden you have, but that's when the slugs come out. That's, when things get really dicey.
For a home gardener, you can grow on raised beds. You can use plastics if you choose to, or you could use landscape fabric, or you could use straw.
Now, let me stop you right there, Bill, because I don't use a lot of plastic in my – I don't think I've ever used plastic in my garden. I might if I was going to grow tropical melons or something like that. And it's not that I have anything against it, but my fear is, isn't water going to pool up in them during a rain and make the situation worse? It's going to stay on the surface as opposed to eventually draining into that soil.
Typically not, because what – we try to do is when we do a raised bed, we have a little bit of a curvature to the top if we're using plastics. But if you don't want to use plastics, you could use paper, newspaper on top, and then just punch some holes so that water and aeration can get through. Whenever you can keep plants drier, less chance of mold developing on those strawberries or any other plant.
Now, have you guys experimented with a good high-quality compost on the surface of the soil?
We're working both with some conventional growers and some organic growers, and some of the organic growers have used mushroom composts, and they usually do that the fall before.
Right, that's different than the yard waste compost I kind of try to lean gardeners towards.
We encourage gardeners to use a lot of yard compost and correctly made. It has beneficial organisms, helps to fight back some of the pest problems.
One thing before I let you guys go, you did mention you know, black plastic. And, you know, I'm not against this. And especially I was thinking this May, during the time when the strawberries would be setting flowers and fruit, we had some ridiculously cold nights followed by hideously hot days a few days later. But we had many nights in the 30s.
The big problem we get with strawberries is they're blooming very early. And if you get a late frost, it'll kill the flower and kill the fruit. So you get a couple degrees warming above that plastic. Growers and gardeners sometimes employ floating row covers, too, if it gets really frost threatens.
They can hold a lot of heat over the plants and really save you if you only got this one crop coming in June. All right. Peter Nietzsche is a county agricultural agent with the New Jersey Extension at Rutgers University. Bill Lubick is a professor at Rutgers and an agricultural agent with Rutgers. They joined us today to talk about Rutgers' brand new strawberry being grown already by farmers and home gardeners named Scarlet. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Mike. Great to be with you.
Thanks for having us on the show, Mike.
And now, back to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Dana, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Dana. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
And where is Dana good?
Right at this moment, I'm at the Academy of Natural Sciences in the ornithology department.
Oh, is that where you work?
As a volunteer, yes.
Oh, that's great. The Academy of Natural Sciences is this wonderful institution right on Logan Circle, right at the beginning of the parkway that ends in the Philadelphia Museum of Art. What a great area. That the fountain in Logan Circle is my favorite single thing in Philly.
Lots of interesting stuff goes on there.
So what can we do for Dana?
Well, I heard your recommendations on squirrel control last Saturday, and I just thought I'm dealing with an issue of squirrel damage also, but it's on our photovoltaic system that's installed on our barn.
What?
And, yeah, the squirrels found a really great place to winter over and build nests underneath the photovoltaic panels, and they amuse themselves by chewing all the wiring under there.
Oh, my goodness. You have solar panels?
Yes.
And because they have to be angled, there's space underneath them.
Exactly.
So you built squirrel condos?
Yes. Unbeknownst to us, we certainly did. And our electric bills this winter actually started to go up and up and up, and I thought it was because of the snow covering them, but apparently not.
It was because the squirrels were taking them offline one by one?
Well, the whole system seemed to go down. I wasn't aware of it. It could have been gradual. Since I didn't know what was going on, I didn't know, you know, how fast it happened, whether it went out all at once.
But you had squirrels turning off your solar panels?
Basically, yes.
When I used to do my first stand-up routines, when I would go around and give garden talks and people would ask me a question about squirrels, I would pull a cell phone out of my pocket and say, this is the only reason the human race is still around, because the squirrels did not prepare for this. And then I told them the squirrel plan for world domination. At a given signal, squirrels were going to chew through all the ignition wires in every car in America. Then they were going to chew through the phone lines to the house. Then they would send the suicide squirrel to hit the transformer to cut off the electric to the house. And then when you could no longer get away and you're cold and dark and you can't call for help, that's when you would find out they had eaten all your stored food. So the only reason we're alive is cell phones. Squirrels,
thank goodness.
They're probably planning to take down all the towers somehow.
You know. Probably. They're practicing on my photovoltaic system.
So what have you done?
Well, I called the people that installed it and asked them if they could figure out what was wrong with the system, and that's what they found. And at this point, they are on the roof dismantling all the panels and then reinstalling them so that they are close together. They butt together so there's no space for squirrels, and they also are installing a squirrel guard around the units so that hopefully we will not have this problem again.
Well, you know, I have to warn you that squirrels are true rodents. You know, their teeth keep growing and they are tremendous chewers. This problem occurs. Squirrels will chew their way through soffits and other areas and get into people's attics. And then, you know, you have to put this special screening up that allows them to leave but not come back in. You know, one thing you may ask them to do, or you could probably install some cameras up there.
Good idea.
Because they will try to chew their way back in now that they know how much fun this is. Mm-hmm. And down in the Southwest, there are creatures called pack rats that when your car is parked, they will crawl underneath the hood of your car and they'll chew through all the wiring because apparently the outside of wiring is delicious and nutritious. So down south, they sell all these different pack rat sprays for you to spray the wiring of your car. It's like a concentrated animal repellent. So even though they're going to put up these guards, I would urge you to have the wires sprayed with animal repellent and then have some sort of good sighting system up there.
Great.
But thank you for the warning that the evil long-tailed servants of Satan are capable of even cutting off our solar paneled electricity, but be aware that they will try to gnaw around this caging and get in there.
I really appreciate that. While they're still up there working, I think then maybe we might do something like that because this is a pretty expensive repair job.
And I honestly believe the squirrels know it's there and they like that area. So you definitely want to keep them out.
It's not really a gardening story, but I felt that maybe some of your listeners would benefit from my misfortune.
There's no one listening who hasn't lost a fight to the evil squirrels, Dana.
Probably, sadly true.
All right, good luck.
Well, thank you very much.
Take care.
You too.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and warn all of Ohio that I am indeed coming to Dayton this fall. I'll be doing a big public event on Saturday, October 3rd, a special event for WYSO members that Friday evening, and then I'll be getting out of town before the Villagers can find their torches and pitchforks on Sunday. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back to save your poorly planted trees and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we will tell you what you can do if you fear or even if you know that your precious trees were planted with their roots still wrapped up. Those roots must be freed. We'll tell you how to do it without killing the trees. And that's coming up after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls and this.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by Burpee, celebrating their 139th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, fruits of all kinds, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com. And the Espoma Company, makers of Biotone Starter Plus for new transplants, full of beneficial microbes and mycorrhiza for deeper roots and stronger plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929.
1-888-346-9499. Laura, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Laura. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
And where are you?
I'm in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, in Salisbury.
What can we do for Laura in Salisbury?
I planted tomatoes last year and this year in quadrants the same. Previously, for the last 7 years, I had them in those quadrants as well. Last year, the tomatoes were thriving. After a month, they all started to become limp, and even though they had little buds on them, they started to die branch by branch.
Okay. Now, Laura, you confuse me with the term quadrant.
I live in a rural area, and the property is sloped. It's called a bank house.
Right.
And the quadrants are areas in which I plant vegetables. There are six of them.
Oh, okay.
So in two of the quadrants, I have the tomatoes.
These are not raised beds, I'm presuming. These are flat.
They're not raised beds, but they're bordered by pieces of wood to just.
They are sectioned off. Does that mean that you do not step in the growing area?
Right, if that's correct.
Okay, good. So they're not wide quadrants. They're not wider than 4 feet. But you have been growing the tomatoes in the same one year after year.
I have. Yes, I have.
Now, your tomatoes, when they start to give up the ghost, does it begin with leaves yellowing and browning at the bottom of the plant?
It does. It seems to be at the base of the plant.
Mm-hmm.
It's yellowing.
Right, and it progresses upward.
It does, but the limping leaves, the curling and limping and the branch limps,
right,
they're all over the plant. But yes, I do notice yellow at the base.
And are there any spots, any nasty-looking, greasy, grubby spots on the leaves or the developing fruits?
I don't see any.
I think you have a very simple case of verticillium wilt. When you grow tomatoes in the same spot year after year, this naturally occurring soil organism in our area, that is the Northeast, called verticillium wilt, begins to build up in the soil. And it makes its presence known by wilting and turning yellow the lowest leaves on the plant, and in the beginning, progressing upwards slowly. Now, if you plant a tomato in the same spot the next year, the yellowing will begin earlier in the season, and it will progress rapidly. The only solution is to rotate your tomatoes to some of those other quadrants. You still have time, for instance, to get to a big independent garden center and see if they have any tomatoes they've been nursing along. You could still, as long as you planted it in a new area where tomatoes didn't grow the past couple of years, that tomato plant would be fine. But the tomatoes that you have that have been growing in the same area year after year are not going to make it this season. Interestingly enough, there are several varieties that you can buy, seeds and plants, that after the variety name will have the letters V and F. V stands for verticillium, F stands for fusarium, and those are the dominant wilts in North America. Fusarium tends to occur down south. There are also tomatoes that are grafted, where the rootstock is highly resistant to this. But, of course, the simplest solution, if you have enough room, is to rotate your tomatoes. Grow them in a different spot for a couple of years, and the wilt
so
will.
So in those quadrants, I should never plant tomatoes for the next couple of years, and then that problem will go away?
Exactly, and the magic number is 3. Give it a 3-year period off, and it'll be safe to plant tomatoes there again. So as you plant in the future, keep a good record of where your tomatoes were and make sure they just go into a different area the following year. As long as you can keep moving them around and you don't go back to the first spot for 3 years, you'll never see this problem again.
Okay. All right. I really appreciate your help. Thank you.
All right. Good luck, Laura.
Thanks a lot.
1-888-346-9499. Henry, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I need your help with this peach tree. I want good peach, but they are all, they give me like bubbles over the fruit, you know. Can you help me about this kind of problem?
Okay. Now, where are you, Henry?
Lansdale, Pennsylvania.
Okay. And you have a unique accent, let's say. Where are you from?
I'm South American. I'm Colombian.
Oh, excellent. So you have a single peach tree?
Yeah, I had two trees, but I had that boring, I guess, on the tree. And anyway, the fruit gave me like clear things coming out, you know.
Okay.
So I need your help.
Okay. Well, I'm having a little trouble understanding exactly what you're saying, but I do know from peach trees because I have quite a few of them myself. Now, did you plant this tree or did you move into a place that had peach trees?
Well, I didn't plant it. Just they come out from the sea, you know.
Oh, did you plant a peach pit and a tree grew up?
Yes, I'm like that, you know. Yes, it just came out of the, I guess, from the garbage. This sea came out and came out there and then I thought, well, then I tried to keep it.
Oh, okay. And how many years ago was this, Henry?
Well, the one is right now is a couple of years old, maybe 3 years old. But I have some old ones before, and I had the same problem.
Okay. Now, in 3 years, a peach tree would not grow very big from a pit, though. It would be still very small, like a little sapling.
Oh, no, this one will go up right now like 8-10 feet. It might be 10 feet high if I let it grow completely.
Oh, okay.
Right now it might be about around eight feet.
Okay. Well, that's older than 3 years, sir.
All right. Well, maybe it's fine. I'm not sure.
Okay. So with peaches, it's very important that you prune the branches heavily every winter and or spring. You got to remove a good third of the branches, most of the branches that are sticking straight up, and then a lot of other branches to make sure the tree gets lots of light and air. Have you been doing that?
Yeah, I've been trying to do. Maybe I'm doing it right, but I did, yes.
And then has the tree been flowering very nicely in the spring?
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, I have plenty of fruit, you know, but just that they come up like bubbles, clear bubbles.
Okay, so you prune your trees, they flower, and then little fruits develop. Do you then remove most of those little fruits?
I did not remove any.
That's one of the problems. We've talked about this a lot on the show. Peaches and apples are both a lot of work. First, you have to prune them, and then after they flower and those little fruits form, you have to go out and remove 3/4 of the baby fruits, and it is really tedious work. I have about 5 active trees right now, and I fill up multiple 5-gallon buckets with tiny little fruits. But that's the only way that you're going to get healthy fruit that gets to be big enough and tasty enough, and it avoids these kind of disease and pest issues. If you let all the fruit remain on the tree, it'll all just rot out and never get past a certain size, and it'll have any number of bad things happen to it.
Okay, I will remove the most I can. Yes, okay.
Yeah, and I think you still have some time. What you want to do is make sure that in between each fruit you leave, there's room for 2 full-size peaches.
Okay.
So especially this year, don't be afraid to remove most of them.
Okay.
And then make sure the bottom of the tree is clear. No wood mulch, no grass growing right up to the trunk, and no old fruit from last year.
Okay.
That's what we call a clean orchard floor. Just a ring of dirt around the tree is fine. If you can find some good quality compost and put it down, That's another way of preventing disease and pest issues on the tree. The big thing you can do now is to thin the fruits, and that's so important. I'm so glad you called, because it's still time for people who don't know that to go out and remove most of the baby apples and peaches and get some good fruit at the end of the season.
Any spray or anything that I can make to try to help it?
No, I think if you thin the fruits, you're going to have a lot of success.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, good luck, Henry.
Have a beautiful day. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Can a tree planted with its roots all wrapped up be rescued? Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please read us this week's troubling question.
Sure, Mike. Lisa in Jenkintown, PA writes, Mike, the proper tree planting portion of your recent conversation with plant scientist Linda Chalker Scott scared the heck out of me. About 3 years ago, we bought a fringe tree, a crabapple, and an evergreen from a local nursery and paid them to plant all three. The crew dug the holes wider than deeper, as you always instruct, but left the burlap and wire cages around the root balls. I ran outside yelling, no, 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 fought with them for a while, and then called the owner. I told him I wanted the wrapping off and the roots spread out, citing my previous success planting trees that way. He refused, saying it would harm the roots to unwrap them, that he always planted trees this way and they would be fine.
You know, this absolute refusal by so-called professionals to do things correctly is really frustrating. What good is it when a homeowner knows the right way if the landscaper insists on doing it wrong? And you got to be honest, it's really tough to put your foot down to these people, especially when you weren't expecting a confrontation that day. But the only real answer here is to have said, then put him back on the truck, issue me a refund, and I'll take my business someplace else. But that is really difficult to do, especially when you're dealing with somebody who sounds like a real bully. I hope she has at least warned others about this business on all those wonderful review sites where you can warn people about such things.
Well, I think she might have felt a lot better if she had stood up to him that day. She continues, after a lot of back and forth and against my better judgment, I allowed the work to be finished his way. But after the men left, I excavated the top third of the root balls and cut away as much of the burlap and wire as I could reach, then replaced the earth. All three trees seem okay, but none of them are as robust as I think they should be. Although when I tried the wiggle test, none of them seemed to move much, if at all.
Now that's a very good sign. Our guest that day, Linda Chalker Scott, author of the great new book, How Plants Work, explained that you can test a tree that doesn't seem to be thriving by grabbing a hold of the trunk and trying to wiggle it. If the roots are trapped inside a burlap bag, the tree will often move around very easily in the ground.
Our listener concludes, I would hate to lose these trees. Do you think we should dig them up and remove whatever wrapping and wire we find, or just leave them alone and hope for the best? Mike, that's almost impossible to answer. I can't believe you chose this question.
Well, I can't pick low-hanging fruit every week, and I have a secret tough question weapon, my magic 8-ball. Oh, magic 8-ball, knower of all things. Should Lisa dig up her trees?
Oh, yeah? And what's it say?
Yikes! It says it is certain.
It's a shame you can't ask it exactly how to do that, eh, Houdini?
You know, I knew you'd turn on me given half a chance. Now, I would not do anything in the heat of summer. This is the worst time of year to do anything that could stress a plant. Her first good chance to correct this is going to occur in the fall, after all the leaves have dropped off the deciduous trees and that evergreen is safely dormant. I'm thinking sometime shortly after Thanksgiving. The dead of winter would be technically perfect, but you got to presume the soil's going to be frozen then.
So early spring?
Well, again, technically, yes, but spring is generally a wet time in the Northeast, and you can do a lot of harm working in wet soil. So if the soil is dry, fine. But if not, you're going to have to wait through another growing season. So I'm going with late fall. The ideal tool to use would be an air spade. a device that professionals use to uncover the root flare of trees that were planted too deeply. It blows away soil and mulch, and it doesn't harm the roots. Now, if she can't rent one or hire a pro who has one, she's going to have to do a physical uncovering, and it's going to need to be slow and gentle. You can't just push a shovel into the soil. So get a good pair of very tight gloves. Baseball batting gloves are the ideal for this kind of work. And dig away as much dirt around the top of the tree as possible. And if you encounter big lateral roots, stop and put the soil back because everything is fine.
I get it, because then the roots have escaped.
Exactly. But if you reach a layer of burlap instead, you can move up to a trowel because the roots are, quote, safe inside that bag. So expose the bag and cut the burlap away from the sides. You can leave some burlap on the bottom. It's the lateral root growth you want to encourage.
And the wire cages?
Well, you know, if these were one-year-old trees, I'd dig them up completely and replant them. But at 3 years, I really want to minimize the stress. I think the roots should be able to find their way through the holes in the wire cages once the burlap is gone. Well, that sure was some great advice about beating the old ball in burlap now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to leave my roots constricted if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore. As long as you include your location, send the email to garden@whyy.org. Oh, and please include your location. And after that, your location. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares about your location, but where you will find the answers to all those garden questions you were going to ask in that email, as well as audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and like us at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Rich Banowitz keeps our website up and running. Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Al Banks is our editor. We are getting really tired of explaining that our new intern Stevens' last name is pronounced Dre like the horse, Ho like the tool, and Bull like the animal. So henceforth, he shall be known as Steverino, or maybe the amazing Stevie D. Or... Anyway, I'm the man of many names, including Mike McGrath. And if I get booked for one more gig before the end of this year, I'm going to need somebody to loosen up my root system with an air spade so I can see you again next week. You know, I bet that would tickle. That would feel good around your toes. Ooh, ooh, air spade around your toes. Ooh. Are you yearning to buy a load of bulk compost but suspicious of its contents? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal two easy tests that'll tell you if it's black gold or the black plague. Plus your fabulous phone calls.